Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Decoding the Unknown, the show where we decode things. In this one, Golden Eagle Killer Car, written by Katie. I've never read this before. That's the format of the show. We're going to explore this. Yeah, I've never heard of this. I don't think cars can kill. I mean, cars can definitely kill people, like in the same way that guns can kill people. But it's usually like someone's drunk or just not paying attention. I mean, not with guns, with cars. Let's get into it. This started as research into an evil car. That's not a thing. It's like, stop giving emotions to inanimate objects. They're not real. I mean, they're real, but they're not animate. You know what I mean. But devolved into research into one person. An extremely confusing person who may or may not have been telling the truth. But we'll get to her in good time. Let's start off with the story of a car with a bloodthirsty appetite and see where we end up. Thanks to Reddit user Boa in a Bowl. The suggestion. Whenever I hear funny names like this, you know, people's like online handles and stuff, it just reminds me of like one class that I took back at school. I must have been like 17, and it was like called, you know, career development or whatever, where you learn like how to put together a CV or some pointless like that. God, it's been a long time since I've had a CV. But, and there was an example of like a good CV and a bad CV, and we had to point out the things that was wrong with the bad CV. And for some reason, I don't know why it stuck with me, but our teacher decided to use the, there was like a hotmail.com address. And he was like, he chose the name, it's on a stick at hotmail.com or something like that. Like really like weird. And he was like, what's wrong with this email address? And I'm like, well, sir, maybe you should have your name at hotmail.com. I don't know why. This is a pointless aside. I'm sorry. We should already be getting into the content. I know. I'm terrible at being a YouTuber and a podcaster and just at things in general. Although, as usual, when people want to hear about something weird like this, the outcome is always going to be a bit disappointing. Sorry. Spoiler alert. I'm bad at this. Every bit of YouTube advice is like, make sure people want to keep watching. Make sure you really sell it. And here it's like, nah, the ending's going to be shit. You shouldn't be watching this at all. If Simon, even if he eventually even gets there, after all his bloody rambling. But come on, whoever heard of a possessed demonic car with a penchant for killing people? Sounds like a Stephen King story, doesn't it? Well, we'll get to him too later. But for now, let's start with the gory story of the Golden Eagle. The Golden Eagle. In 1964, when this particular Dodge 330 limited edition rolled off the production line, nobody would have suspected the trail of death and destruction that it was about to leave throughout the state of Maine. It started life with the Old Orchard Beach Police Force, and within just a few years, all three of the police officers who had driven it ended up killing their families before killing themselves. That seems statistically very unlikely. What the fuck was happening in that police office? Police office? Police station. What was going on there? Three officers killed their families and killed themselves? Good lord. Obviously, this might have just been a coincidence, but the police found the car to be creepy enough as a common link that they got rid of it and sold it to a car dealer where the once silver car was sloppily painted gold. I guess gold cars are a thing. In 1975, it was bought by the Allen family, sanded down and painted a 70s appropriate orange color. While they used it as a regular family car with no murdery issues, local religious groups were apparently offended by the presence of the killer car in their community and frequently tried to vandalize it. That doesn't sound like a real thing. How would they possibly know? This turned out to be a big no-no, and anyone who so much as laid an ill-intentioned hand on the Golden Eagle was dispatched, Final Destination style. This is not real. This is a Stephen King book. I feel like I've just been tricked into reading a Stephen King book. I don't know why I said it like that. I like Stephen King books. That 1163, whatever, the one about the Kennedy assassination, is one of my favorite books. The most well-known victims of the car's wrath include one man who was hit by an 18-wheeler truck and was decapitated, and at least four people who were killed by lightning. Bro, if you are getting hit by an 18-wheeler truck, I'd be surprised if you weren't decapitated. Wouldn't you just be like red mist? Like, Jesus. Two other kids were hit by cars as they were cycling past the Golden Eagle and were thrown onto its hood, where they subsequently died. Well, maybe it's because it's a golden car. People are like, whoa, look at that! And then you get hit by a bus. This is horrible enough as it is, but these were two separate incidents many years apart. And this has been going on until fairly recently. Another would-be vandal touched the Golden Eagle in 2008 and immediately went home and killed his family and pet dog and burned his house down. He has been named as a former University of Maine student, Matthew Cushing. The total victim count has been given as anywhere between 14 and 32 people. I suppose that's whether you count the indirect victims like the police officers and Cushing's family members. I don't know whether the dog is included in this tally. It's not, because that's not what's included in death tolls like that. Locals of the Old Orchard Beach area kept asking the current owner, Wendy C. Allen, to get rid of the car, and local pastor Bernard Elliott even encouraged his congregation to vandalize the Golden Eagle. Allen, it's like, bro, you want your congregation to die? Anyone who touches it gets hit by a truck. In this telling of the story, which I think is mostly bullshit, Allen and Elliot wound up in a 2004 court battle, which ended with Pastor Elliot's arrest for fraud and his subsequent suicide. Jesus, what is going on? Another victim of the Golden Eagle. Eventually, in 2010, some locals finally managed to disassemble the car and scatter its various parts amongst the junkyards of Maine, diluting and hopefully ending its deathly powers. They didn't think about the owner of the car, though, Wendy C. Allen, member of the Allen family, to whom the Golden Eagle had been a faithful family vehicle. She spent the last several years finding the pieces and reconstructing her car, where it sits on her property to this day. Why? Why would you do this? Like, obviously it's all nonsense and I don't believe in any of this, but why do this? Debunking the Golden Eagle. Not bad for a spooky story, right? It's pretty much your standard fodder, a cursed object that kills people who try to mess with it. The interesting thing about this one, though, is that the Golden Eagle does exist, or at least it did exist. While you might have thought some elements of the tale were, let's say, a little far-fetched, other elements can be confirmed. While it looks a little ungainly, the 1964 Dodge 330 was used as a police and emergency service vehicle because it was roomy and pretty speedy. The Golden Eagle, which is the name given to it by Wendy Allen, was used by the police and later sold to the Allen family. Wendy Allen has had many run-ins with local religious groups, and her car has been reportedly vandalized and was stolen from her property. But as far as verifiable bits of this tale go, that's about it. The story of the killer car can be one of three things. Number one, true. Technically it could be. I mean, the car's not killing people, but there could just be an enormous number of coincidences happening. Number two, a successful urban legend that's grown up around half-truths, lies, and or prejudicial statements about the current owner, Wendy Allen. Or three, a story concocted almost entirely by Wendy Allen. Yeah, in my opinion, it's three. So let's start with number one. Is this story true? No. Every online source mentions the police officer killings, but to have three police officers from the same force commit murder-suicide within a short time of each other is quite unlikely. Yes, it's enormously unlikely. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but unless there was something in the water, it isn't probable. Yeah, I'll be like, there's some black mold or some in that police station that's making people go crazy.
That gas leak last year.
Oh, don't blame it all on a gas leak year.
The 1970 census pegs the population of Old Orchard Beach at 5,404 people. Oh my god, if there's a triple murder three multiple murder suicides in a short span in a community of about 5,000 people, that's something that is going to be way more famous than just, I've never heard of this, it's never come up on my, I do another show that's all about true crime. I feel like that would have been covered. Because that's insane. A triple murder-suicide event carried out by police officers in a place with a population that small would have definitely made the news, but I can't find any reference to it online. It doesn't help that there are never any names given that would be helpful in checking things like this, but I guess that's why these stories are so mysterious. Yeah, if anyone finds this, like, I don't know, ever heard of this, ever stumbled across it on Google, this show is watched by and listened to by quite a lot of people these days. Let us know. Let's see if we got any references. Thousands of people looking. I get the feeling we're not going to get anything because I have a feeling it's nonsense. If there were useful things like actual evidence, we could prove the stories were true or false, but a lack of checkable evidence means they always hang around the periphery of, maybe it happened, with lots of people just accepting the information at face value, not thinking much of it and assuming it's true. Yeah, I heard that. And because I'm a skeptic and not someone who just assumes it's true because I read it on the internet, I'm like, no, not even a coincidence, just didn't happen. So yes, I don't think the police murder suicide part of the story actually happens. So how about all the other victims? Again, these are just given in vague details with no names attached. It's just things like a man or local teenagers. The story goes that four people who tried to vandalize the Golden Eagle met their ends by being struck by lightning. I looked up lightning death statistics and it's not that common, especially in Maine. According to KXAN.com, only three fatalities due to lightning strikes were recorded in Maine from 2006 to 2023. While that's actually on the high side per million people, I'm thinking that four people being hit in a small time frame again would be newsworthy. But there's nothing to be found. Someone being hit by a truck and the head coming off is conceivable, I suppose, but whether that happens and if the person has any link with the Golden Eagle is unknown. as we don't know who they were. So what about the two cycling kids who were hit by cars and then landed on the Golden Eagle itself? Maybe in a freak accident this might have happened, but this was apparently on two different occasions years apart, making it more than a little fishy. Yeah, one time, of course it can happen. Two times, vanishingly unlikely. How about the most recent alleged victim, Matthew Cushing? We actually have a name, and this guy did indeed murder his mother, stepbrother, and stepfather in 2008 before setting fire to the house. Had he been in the vicinity of the Golden Eagle before this happened, though? Well, according to the Golden Eagle episode from Bedtime Stories, this bit has become attached to the story is Wendy Allen herself claimed to have seen Cushing attempting to vandalize her car when he was younger. As will become clear later, this may or may not be true. Wait, so when he was younger, like how many years passed? And then he just happened to like do some horrific crimes later? There was another name mentioned in this story, the pastor Bernard Elliott. I only actually saw his name pop up once, and that was in the Bedtime Stories episode. Intrigued at having a name to research, I found that he died in 2016 at the age of 88, which is 14 years later than his supposed run-in with Wendy Allen. According to Bedtime Stories, he was apparently being investigated. I don't know this Bedtime Stories. Is this like a... If this is a bedtime story, it's not the sort of bedtime story that I'd read to my kids. Holy sh... According to Bedtime Stories, he was apparently being investigated for fraud. I'm going to look up this bedtime story. I've got YouTube on my iPad here. Let's just open that up and have a look. Bedtime Stories. Let's see what bedtime stories are coming along. Oh, there we go. Oh no, I'm just getting a bunch of like videos for kids, but I found it. Oh, nearly a million subscribers. Congratulations. Ah, okay. So they're particularly grim stories. These stories are not suitable for younger audiences. Noted. Yeah, they're kind of just like, you know, urban legend style story stuff. Let's get back to it, shall we? Intrigued at having a name to research, I found that he died in 2016 at the age of 88, which is 14 years later than his supposed run-in with Wendy Allen. According to Bedtime Stories, he was apparently being investigated for fraud. Wait, was this the guy who allegedly killed himself? Well, he died at 88. It seems a lot later. And I know the wheels of justice turn slowly, but I doubt that something that started in 2004 was going to cause him to kill himself in 2016. I don't really know the best way to Google court cases, but I tried my best and I couldn't find anything in the public record with both of these people attached. So again, I think this is untrue and possibly even libelous. Yeah, that seems like pretty, like, it's not, you found a real person and then you talk some shit about him. That's not really cool. Whoever made up this story, it seems like not to be attached to anyone, so it's going to be quite hard to find someone to sue for this libelous story. Although if people are retelling it as fact, then I guess they could all be sued, maybe. I don't know enough about this. As for the car eventually being removed from the property and broken into pieces, only to be reformed by Allen, I really could not tell you if that part's true or not. It is reported as fact by everything I've read that the car was junked. However, these same pieces were also just regurgitating the whole rest of the story, so who knows if this part is real. Unless all the junkyards were quite close together and the pieces were still in large part intact, how the hell was Wendy Allen supposed to go around to all those places, identify the actual pieces of her car, and get them reassembled back on her property? For what I can tell, the car is still there, but this again could mean at least four things. Number one, it was junked and the photos you see online are from a long time ago. Number two, it was never junked and it's been there all along. Number three, Allen has reconstructed or claimed the body, but the interior stuff is just missing or made out of non-original parts. Number four, it is the Golden Eagle reborn from all of its original constituent parts. I don't know what to believe here. Do I believe that she went round and found all of the individual parts? No, but maybe. When researching this, I found multiple references to the fact that the Golden Eagle has now been bedazzled by Wendy Allen, who uses it as a touring vehicle to raise awareness about autism. This is definitely not true, however, as that car is a Volvo, now known as the Dazzling Raspberry. It's absolutely covered in marbles, beads, and those small fuzzy little teddy bears that come on a keyring or as a pencil topper. How does this raise awareness about autism? It's a little bit confusing. Just for a glimpse into this woman's life, which we'll come to in a bit, this car has 400 of these little bears stuck on it and apparently over 2 million beads, rhinestones, buttons, and marbles. So that's nice. It doesn't sound very aerodynamic though, does it? Okay, I think we've exhausted this section, so let's move on to a tangentially related section. I saw a video the other day, or an image or whatever, and it was like people bedazzling the insides of their cars with like marbles and shit, but they've bedazzled the steering wheel, like the bit where the airbag comes out. So if you're in a crash, it's going to be like a nail bomb going off as those marbles just enter your body. And it's like, people are dim. The Stephen King Connection. Stephen King's Christine was published in 1983 and is basically about a possessed car which murders people. Could this have been inspired by the story of the Golden Eagle, especially as that car is also located in King's home state of Maine? Practically every article I found states that the Golden Eagle was the inspiration for Christine, but I don't know if that's true or if it's just an obvious connection that nobody's bothered looking into. For what it's worth, the only thing I could really find that wasn't just every article I'd read pointing at each other was that King first got the seed idea for Christine in 1978 from his car at the time, a Fiat Pinto. Sure, who cares if the Golden Eagle did inspire his book anyway? It's a nebulous urban legend, not somebody's intellectual property or an existing publication. I don't even have a clue when the Golden Eagle story started either, but from what I found out in the research for this, it was probably not until after Christine was published. More on this in the next section. In an unusually proactive move for me, I contacted Stephen King on Twitter or X to ask him about this, so I'm sure he'll get right back to me immediately with all the details. Yeah, you bet he will. That sounds likely. Although Stephen King does love Twitter, right? He's one of the big Twitter people. Whether the link is real or imagined, the current owner, Wendy Allen, has stated on her website that hordes of Stephen King fans have come to her property looking for the Golden Eagle and trying to take parts of the real Christine. For her part, she had apparently never heard of Stephen King until recently, despite him being one of the most famous living people from Maine, as well as one of the most well-known writers in the entire world. Look, you may never have read a book by Stephen King, but you fucking heard of Stephen King. He's Stephen King. She did then go to the trouble of looking him up, but according to her website, she was not happy with what she found, saying, "I am asexual and sex repulsed. So you can imagine my horror to find out that this Stephen King person was a sex fiend who wrote sex-infested horror." Okay. Okay, that's weird though. Fair enough, but I would never call Stephen King's work sex-infested. I don't think I'd ever call anything sex-infested. That's a weird thing to say. And I've read a huge number of his books. As a young teen, there was disappointingly little graphic sex to be found, so I'd usually pick my mum's Jilly Cooper books over the couple of Kings that my dad had if I wanted to find out more about the exciting, puzzling, and so far in the future is not even funny world of people having sex while I was sitting on the loo. Here's a weird tangent I just thought of. As just mentioned, I used to read on the toilet because I liked reading and it was a quiet place to sit. My mum told me that reading on the toilet would give me hemorrhoids, or piles, as she called them. And that was the sum total of the warning. In my child brain, and to be fair, she never told me any different, I assumed it was the act of reading that would cause the hemorrhoids, not the fact that sitting on the toilet for long periods of time could be detrimental to your bum brain health. I had no idea. I didn't even know that that was possible. Obviously, it's possible to get hemorrhoids. But I didn't know it came from, like, sitting on the loo for too long. Anyway, this meant that for quite a while, whenever I went to the loo, I would close my eyes, lest some errant words from a shampoo bottle or a packet of toilet paper cross my field of vision, and therefore cause painful swelling inside my rectum. You know, we have a child brains are weird, right? You gotta think about, like, I gotta think about what I say to my kids, because it's like, you don't know how they interpret that shit. And you're like, it's like, you think you're being perfectly clear, and they'll be like, yeah, no, I can never read on the toilet, because if I even look at a word, I'm going to get a hemorrhoid. You'll be happy to hear that I eventually found out that reading per se does not cause hemorrhoids, although I don't do it anymore just because it's plain unhygienic. I'm always on my phone on the toilet. Moving on. In another Wendy Allen, Stephen King twist, parts of the film Thinner, based on another of King's books, were filmed on Allen's property, and Stephen King apparently even outed Allen's family as being the real-life Thinner gypsies in a TV interview in 1997, although allegedly Allen didn't find out about this until 2013. She also states on her website that she and her family were in the background of the movie, but she didn't know what was happening at the time. She's never heard of Stephen King, and she was in a movie about a Stephen King book. Like, what? She complains about being harassed by Stephen King fans a lot due to the Christine and Thinner connections, and says about the Thinner movie, "You could imagine my shock when I found out that 14-year-old me is in it, something I found out when I was 39 years old. I don't believe you, Wendy Allen. So, here's where we start entering the third part of the tale of the Golden Eagle. I spent way too much of my life reading about Wendy C. Allen, and when I finally finish this, it'll be time to close the myriad of tabs I have open. I shall X her website out with relish. Here's a good place to introduce a little more of her character into the story. She writes that her unwitting 14-year-old self was in a movie that she didn't know she was in until decades later. Sure, I guess you could be in a crowd scene or in the background accidentally and then spot yourself or someone spots you in the film in the future, but it's unlikely that you would not have realized something was going on, what with the cameras, lights, equipment trucks around, etc. Yes, it's very noticeable. It's not a small operation when they're making a movie. And this was supposed to have taken place on her family's land, so you would have thought that her parents might have mentioned it to her. Also, Thinner came out in 1996 and wasn't held up in production for years or anything, so presumably It was filmed the same year, or in 1995 at the earliest. I believe Wendy C. Allen was born in 1975, meaning that she was 20 when Thinner was filmed, not 14. Those ages are light years away from each other, and once you realize that either a memory or recounting of the story might be a little shaky, everything she's ever said about anything just falls apart, to the surprise of nobody. Wendy Christine Allen. Hey, well, guess what? Her middle name is actually Christine, just like the Stephen King car. Coincidence? Yes, I do think that's just a coincidence. To get a better understanding of this woman might help to know that she's also known as Eel Cat of the Laughing Gnome Hollow. After having wasted far too much time reading her astounding amount of online content, I mean, seriously, this woman might have even written as much as Liam's alleged forthcoming Monster Cash Crim episode, I've come to the following conclusion. She is the most infuriating person, possibly in the entire world, but definitely regards to researching an episode of Decoding the Unknown. Now, I don't want to slag her off too much, as she stated she has autism, so her prolific online output might be in some way related to the specific way her brain works, but oh my God, the amount of weird stuff in that brain needs to be looked into. It's clear that she has deep-seated mental health issues and is also a prolific fantasy writer, and let's just say it's likely her stories about her life and her stories about her made-up stuff probably combine fairly often. She also frequently contradicts herself and states things that cannot possibly be true. When I first started reading about her, I realized none of this, and then it all became clear. One such example is that she constantly mentions that a family was killed and that anyone who has any information should contact a specific FBI agent. She gives his name and number. I checked, and this man is a real agent, and the number goes to a crime investigation unit. I really hope this poor guy has not been inundated with phone calls from the public, but I doubt he has these, as the murders are likely not real. For example, Alan says her 8-month-old infant was killed when she herself was attacked by golf club-wielding thugs in a parking lot. In other versions, she's actually 8 months pregnant, so therefore the baby died in utero. Despite having heard all the perps call each other by name, which is not very likely, and giving extreme amounts of detail about their hairstyles, they were never caught. This might not be the only murder that she's talking about, though, and this is where I suddenly realize I started reading the writings of a very troubled person. It's really creepy when you see those things online and you're like reading it, and you're like, you don't know what you're reading, and you're like, oh, I see, this person's schizophrenic. And you're like, that really makes it reminds me of that. I've brought it up before. That letter that someone wrote to their neighbors about asking them to like not make so much noise, not spy on them, not like look through their windows, not install cameras in their house. And it just gets wilder and wilder. And it's like, oh yeah, no, that person, they're mentally unwell. It's this paranoid schizophrenia or whatever. And it's like, of course, no one was planting cameras in their house. It's like, fucking hell. It's creepy. On her website, eelcat.com, Allen states, and I'll just put a warning here for extreme violence against children as this is pretty grim, April the 10th, 2015, 1 p.m. A gang of estimated 74 people, some of them wearing Ku Klux Klan robes, invaded my farm, used a Blow Brothers sewage truck to pump 500 plus gallons of sewage into my motorhome, flooding it over the kitchen counters deep, ripped out all the cabinets and built-in furniture, while 14 men armed with guns held my family down on the ice and snow with guns to our head and used cinder blocks and a metal pole with metal wire loops to beat and behead 10 of my 12 foster children, the youngest age 4, the oldest age 16. May the 15th, 2015, they returned and nailed their heads to my front door. The three people of the November 14th, 2013 attack were among the group. This is someone who's unwell. Now I feel bad not making fun of her. I don't think we were ever making fun of her. But like, this is a person who is unwell. I mean, does this seem likely? This would probably make national headlines at the very least, and some of the details are oddly specific, such as the estimated 74 people and the 500 plus gallons of sewage. Allen also states on her website that she'd been legally blind since birth and has nonverbal autism, meaning that while the foster care system leaves a lot to be desired, I don't believe she would be in the running to be fostering 12 kids at the same time in a motorhome. Basically, this story stinks as much as a motorhome overrun with sewage from a Blow Brothers sewage truck. There's so much more I want to rant about after having read far too much about this woman, but I know we need to turn it back around to the Golden Eagle at some point, so I'll just add one more tidbit. On her LinkedIn page, she states she has an IQ of 217. Nice try, Wendy. That would put you above Isaac Newton, Leonardo da Vinci, Nikola Tesla, Marie Curie, and Stephen Hawking. It's not impossible, I guess. But maybe there would have been a little press about this bizarre lady with a huge IQ living in a tent in the woods gluing rhinestones to old Volvos. Anyway, back to our friend and hers, the Golden Eagle. Yeah, she's unwell. I know I said that before, but it's like, we can't... She needs help. in my opinion. I'm not a medical professional or anything like that, but this doesn't seem like the writing and the stories of someone who is all there. This has definitely been in possession of the Allen family since at least 1975, and Wendy is the registered owner. She disputes its haunted reputation many times on her various websites, and she's had plenty over the years, including MySpace and Squidoo, which I had to use the Wayback Machine to find, but it's all full of the same old stuff. Why Squidoo? I've never heard of that. Oh, and quick rant, she states many times, I do not have or use email, but she has a presence on like 15 different social websites, which there is absolutely no way you can do without having an email address. Honestly, the amount of stuff I haven't even said about her. I definitely spent too long reading her many sites. She does say something salient, though, which is, as many as 34 suicides, beheading, and death by lightning strikes are attributed to the car by some people. Though no direct link to the car in any death, murder, or suicide has ever been determined, lack of proof the car is killing people has never stopped people from accusing the car of killing people. Well, well said, Wendy, and it's a good point. Even if all these bizarre deaths are real, which they aren't, who's to say that the Golden Eagle is even the connecting link? Although, just a few paragraphs later, she says, we can confirm that at least 34 of the suicides attributed to being caused by the car were in fact people who at some point did in fact touch the car, though we cannot confirm that either the car or a demon caused the 34 suicides in question. Well, it's kind of a backtrack there. Allen does name a police officer who killed his family before killing himself as Bruce Savoy. I looked him up and he did kill his wife before shooting himself, but this was in 2009 and he was 55, meaning that he wasn't one of the police officers driving the Golden Eagle in 1964, as it had been only 10 at the time. She also recounts a tale of when her father was driving the car on railway tracks in front of a speeding train. She states, one of the most frightening experiences of my life was to be in the backseat of the car loaded with firefighters as it made a 230-mile-per-hour run from Portland to Biddeford via train track with a freighter bearing down on the back bumper the entire way. 230 miles per hour? No fucking shot. I looked up the top speed of a 1964 Dodge 330, and it's literally half the speed, Allen says. So you're going to have to excuse me if I think this particular anecdote is another complete load of nonsense. Sorry, I just had to get that out. Remember the University of Maine student who did kill his family in real life? It was Wendy Allen herself who linked him to the story by trying to tell police that she had seen him messing with the car when he was younger. I'm sure they thought this was a really good tip and totally explained why he killed three people. If you're interested, Matthew Cushing's self-confessed motives, apart from obviously being a very troubled person, include being angry at his parents for not funding a backpacking trip, and also being upset that his stepfather was going to leave his mother. Touching a possessed car was not mentioned. Bro, you killed your family because they didn't want to pay you to go backpacking and bum around Europe or whatever? What the fuck? It's unclear what the current state of the Golden Eagle is, as Allen has variously claimed to have rebuilt it and to have just had the pieces sitting around in a shed. There are photos, but these could have been taken at any time. Conclusions. The story of the Golden Eagle is impossible to prove, but with no concrete evidence, I think we can safely say that the car is not possessed, haunted, or evil. No, because cars can't be possessed or haunted, because those aren't real, and they can't be evil. A car can't be evil because it's an inanimate object. In fact, it also apparently did a stint with the fire brigade before becoming Allen's car, helping save lives and property rather than making all the firemen go home and shoot their wives. There are no reports I can find that mention three murder-suicides in a small police department in Maine within a year, which is the biggest headline in this story. I don't know if Wendy Allen made this whole thing up or whether the legend grew up around her, as she's a very strange character who, according to her website, lives in a tent by choice and owns the largest collection of Disney comics in the world. She has a couple of other cars, as well as the previously mentioned dazzling raspberry, so it's not hard to see how other residents of Old Orchard Beach might start spreading rumors about the weird lady with the cars. It's immaterial whether the Golden Eagle influenced the book Christine, but it could potentially be the other way around. If there's anything Wendy C. Allen is, it's inconsistent. This is someone who is apparently sex repulsed, but there's also a link on her website called How to Write Hot Sex, video interview on elf sex lives, which yes, I did click on, but thankfully it just went to another section of her site. I barely scratched the surface with all the stuff I found on eelcat.com, so feel free to have a poke around and come away more confused than when you started. I don't think I'll be doing that. Allen has posted multiple times on places like Reddit where the comments are generally locked, but there was one that summed up my feelings exactly. She had written a plea to get in touch with the FBI about an attempted murder and the kidnapping of some of her cats. The sole comment underneath just says, "What the shit is this place?" I know this has turned into a rant about Wendy Allen now, but she's so intrinsically linked to the story of the Golden Eagle that I think it's warranted. Also, she gave the car the name the Golden Eagle, as it was originally silver in color and only later painted it a burnt orange. So how would that name be attached to this urban legend if she herself did not put it out there? She said she named it in 1983, which is when she became the sole owner, and I fail to see how an existing urban legend could incorporate a name change without just disintegrating. If you recall, I said earlier that she was born in 1975. This means she became the owner of the Golden Eagle when she was still a kid, but apparently her dad signed it over to her, which may have been a legal loophole move or something. Also, the car was not running by this point, and Wendy just used it as a playhouse in which to write stories. Very, very imaginative stories. And if you also recall, the Stephen King novel Christine was also published in 1983, so if he was aware of the Golden Eagle, as the car in the legend is now called, it was either called something else at the time, or he'd already written Christine. Oh, and in case you were wondering, I gave him 24 hours, but Stephen King hasn't got back to me. If he ever does reply, I'll let you know. So, while I do think Nasty Neighbors might have been responsible for spreading malicious rumors about Allen, I also believe that she has a large hand in starting, perpetuating, and or adding to the story herself. Yes, definitely. And that's the end of the story of the Golden Eagle, a car which may or may not currently still exist, but whose violent history will live on. And as for Eel Cat of Laughing Gnome Hollow, it was a fun ride, but in the end, my patience was hit by a car and died on the hood of her extremely confusing websites. Yes, and that's where we end today's video. Thanks for being here.
Have you ever stumbled upon a story that's just too weird to be true?
But too intriguing to ignore?
I'm Laura Anderson.
And I'm Tom Reynolds. Together, we're the hosts of Want to Hear Something Weird?
A new podcast where we venture into the heart of mind-bending mysteries.
From peculiar legends to ghostly encounters, we try to separate fact from fiction.
Join us on a journey into the bizarre. Listen to Want to Hear Something Weird wherever you get your podcasts.